Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Scottish Kev Sherry is a songwriter, indie musician, journalist and comic writer. He has performed in the indie guitar band Attic Lights since 2005 and released three critically acclaimed albums, Friday Night Lights in 2008, Super Deluxe 2013 and Love in the Time of Shark Attacks 2019. He is also a member of the indie dance pop collective Disco Mary, who are signed to London-based Groove Bound Records and Bucks Music Group Publishing. In music, he has collaborated with international artists like Bjorn Yitling, Kiris Matthews, and La Casa Azul, and his songs have been remixed by Mogwai, Camera Obscura, The Fratellis, Jim Noir, and The Vaselines. His music with Attic Lights has appeared on HBO's comedy drama Divorce, Netflix Elite, MTV's Teen Mom, BBC's The Culture Show, The One Show, Sports Scene, and ITV's Scott Sport and STV News. His latest solo project, Wrath of Khan, came out in 2025. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Kev Sherry. Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
Where do we find you in the world? I am a native Glaswegian from Scotland, but I have... In the last couple of years, I've moved out to the countryside in the middle of nowhere in the Scottish Highlands. So I am a city boy adapting to country life, which is a slow adaptation, but it has given me a lot of time to write music and record. So I'm in a fairly creative, if rural, place.
So why was the choice to move out from the city to the country?
My wife was quite keen in moving to the countryside. We'd had enough of the city. I think we'd been there, I mean, I've been there all my life, and she grew up in cities throughout the US. So we just wanted to try it, you know. It was just and I thought, you know, if I move to the country, I might write all these incredibly mellow, rural sounding songs, which has turned out to be the case.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age, whether you were a child or teenager, did you feel cool? You want to be in this creative world, this creative space. And how did that journey progress? I know it's different iterations in the space. So let's dive into Kev's journey.
Well, my parents were big music fans, so we always had music in the house. But the pivotal moment I remember is my mum played a lot of Talking Heads music because my mum is David Byrne's cousin.
So okay.
David would send the Talking Heads, you know, the new albums when
yes.
they were released to our house. And I remember one day, I think we were watching some music show and there was a Talking Heads video on it. And my mum said, "That's your cousin." I must have been like 5 or 6. And I remember thinking, "Oh, I want to do that. If I know someone else that can do that,
yeah,
then I can do it." So it was... It sort of broke down that barrier, you know, because sometimes there's that sense of successful, famous people are over there.
Yes.
We're over here.
Exactly.
In a different place. And that demolished that barrier because I thought, well, if he can do it, I can do it. So from a very young age.
So what were the next steps?
The next steps were trying to develop some talent.
Make me try. Okay. How do you mean?
Yeah, well, just learning to play guitar,
learning to write
songs, which, you know, part of it is instinctive, but also you kind of need to understand the structure and, you know, the basics of how songs function. So there was that, and there was also finding a band of like-minded people, which is very difficult to do. And I think it's probably very difficult to do in most creative endeavors. Making sure you've got the right people around you who you can write with, who you're sympathetic with, and who the music becomes a natural flow state rather than being forced. So it took a while. It took until my mid-20s until I met those group of guys who were my first band, Attic Lights, who got signed.
So you mentioned earlier about the formula or the structure of a song. Without going too heavily into the ratios, whatever you want to call it, the mathematics. For the listeners who just listen to a song on the periphery, what is that structure for people who do not realize it?
Again, it's maybe a slightly hard question to answer because okay. every song is different,
yes.
as we all know as listeners. But I mean, in pop, and I'm a big pop kid. I love pop music. So, you know, you have your basic structure of, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, and conclusion. And you have to let the inspiration sort of flow into that. I guess it's like, you know, when you smelt gold or you smelt metal and you let it flow into the shape of the thing you're trying to create.
Yeah.
It's very much like that. I know some people view the artistic creation and songwriting as, again, a sort of mystical process that is somewhere over there and that's what artists do. But I don't see any difference between writing a song and the conversation that you and I are having right now. Because we both have a general idea of what we want to talk about. But you'll say something, I'll improvise a response, and vice versa. And I think it's the same. I think the artistic process is exactly the same, whether you're painting the Sistine Chapel, writing a song, baking a cake, making a podcast. It's all just idea, reaction, idea, reaction. Mm. So in a way, this podcast is a song.
You know, it's interesting. I would love to know who is the person who created that structure of the song. Who was that original person way back when and said, okay, this is how it's going to be. Verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. Who was that person? And why did they say, okay, because now this person said it, we all need to follow the structure. It's an interesting analogy. I must do my research to find out. Anyhow, you reference the creative process of that conversation. So from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song, is it easy every time? What motivated? What invigorated? Let's unpack your creative process in creating that song.
I think I've heard a number of your podcasts before, and I think some of your guests have said something similar, which is that some songs can happen in 3 minutes and some songs take 10 years to finish. And I think it's a strange thing, because you have to be in a state of play. I think if you take it too seriously, it doesn't work. Again, that's like a conversation, because if you're speaking to someone and you're kind of tense and worried about it, it's a stilted conversation. Whereas if you're just in a state of messing around, the best stuff always happens quickly when you're just not thinking about it, you know. And I think that's the same with many things. So I always just try to get myself into that little play state where I'm just messing around.
Naturally, sometimes, even when you are messing around, sometimes things don't come through. So when things taking a little bit longer to get there, does that frustrate you? Do you keep pushing, or do you just let it go and come back and play again another time?
I should let it go and come back another time. But what normally happens is I storm about the house in a bad mood. And my wife's like, what is wrong with you? I was like, the magic isn't happening. But I've never quite learned to relax if it doesn't come, because I just get frustrated.
You have been in a couple of bands in the past, and now you're creating your solo stuff. So what's the difference for you in your experience between being part of the band and creating solo?
Well, I couldn't do the solo stuff if I hadn't been in the band, because you always learn so much from other people. And I learned so much from the Attic Lights guys and the producers we worked with and with the record label people. You know, I just learned so much about what music requires. So now when I'm creating solo music, I have this arsenal of experience that makes it a lot easier for me. And similarly, I have another project, a sort of pop dance electro project called Disco Mary, and that's a collaborative project that's very different from the sort of, I guess I do a very sort of classical songwriting style where it is one man with a guitar, and you know, it's very songwritery. And that was the case with Attic Lights as well. But with my other side project, it's a sort of more like a funky jam that the songs come out of.
So now, just on that reference, you've got this Disco Mary project and your solo project. So has it ever happened that you've started creating for yourself or vice versa with them, And then it was like, oh, no, this is not working. And then you use that song for yourself or you use that song for them. Has that ever happened?
Fairly often. So a probably a good example is there's a Disco Mary song coming out later this year that I actually wrote as a very strummy, folky number for my solo stuff. I guess it just didn't quite work, but I was messing around with it in the rehearsal rooms with Disco Mary. And the moment we all started playing it together, it completely changed into this funk number. And I was like, oh, and I never saw that coming.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very hard to know how the songs will end up or what home they will have, but certainly it does happen. Although sometimes, you know, you're like, I write this song and I'm kind of like, this sounds like a Disco Mary song, but I really want it for Kev Sherry solo.
I'm not sure if you've heard me discussing this, but music's energy, we energy, everything's energy. And when you're trying to control energy, it's not possible. So we can't see energy. So it's like trying to control the role of the song, I suppose, is no longer playing, no longer having that fun. It's that becoming that stressed, stilted element that you spoke of. So it's interesting dynamics. And also it comes to that situation of where sometimes a lot of like the record labels, they want something different, but they want the same thing that's being popular in the charts at the moment. So we want more Ed Sheeran, we want more Sam Smith, we want more Adele. So we want you to be unique, but we want you to sound like that whole opposites type of thing.
Definitely been through the ringer on that, where being on a major label with Attic Lights, who are a very indie, like very kind of alternative indie band, and it was very odd for us to sign to a major label, but they did try and sort of mould us in the direction of other, I guess, more mainstream bands they had, like The Feeling and acts like that. And we were like a square peg in a round hole,
yeah,
on a major label. But to your point about energy, I completely agree. When we make music, we do deal with energy in it. And I always love, because it is, it's sound is an energy. Mm. And I always love that metaphor of, I don't know if you're aware of, you know, string theory, one of the kind of quantum theories about the nature of reality is basically the universe is just a bunch of strings vibrating.
Yeah,
it's almost like the universe is a symphony. And so I sort of clinged, as a musician, I cling to that as in, yes, music is the source of all life.
Have you seen that movie, What the Bleep Do We Know?
No.
Okay, you must Google it. It's all about quantum physics. It was released in 2000, quite a while ago now, like 20 years ago, 2025, 2026, around there. It's all about quantum physics and all that kind of stuff. It's with that deaf actress, Marlee Matlin. So it's sort of a documentary and a conversationalist with a physicist and scientist in the space, but then telling the story at the same time. I'm telling you, you'll love it. It's brilliant.
It sounds like it's going straight on my watch list.
It's brilliant. I love CDs. I love the energy of the energy exchange for the thank you, the thank you of the energy exchange for the hard work. I love the journey of the receiving, the unpacking, the songs from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware, CDs, vinyls, cassettes, massive comebacks around the world. Vinyls, 5.9 million sales in the UK. CDs are now in their basket of products again, whereby based on exchanges, they analyze it for tax purposes. And there needs to be a certain amount of exchanges daily for a product to be there. And the research is showing that it's the younger kids, the teenagers and stuff that are diving into this world. And we have the streaming platforms that people also listen to music on, your perceptions of the landscape.
I love the physical product because, and I think probably like myself, you had the same experience where you buy it, you're in town, you buy the album, and on your way home, you flick through the booklet, you want to see the pictures, you want to read who did what. As I mentioned, we recently moved, and during the move, I packed up all my CDs, which I have hundreds and hundreds of, and I've still not had the chance to put them back out in the room again. And there's a significant thing missing in my life because I can't see the diary of my life anymore. I look at the wall of CDs and that's a narrative taking me through my entire life of all this music that I've listened to. Plus, you know, streaming services, that they are. We can't argue with them. They exist and we all use them, at least I do. But it's very difficult to have a library with a streaming service. You know, when I look at my library of CDs, I'll see something that I haven't listened to in ages and wouldn't have thought to listen to, but I don't see it on Spotify or on Apple Music. I don't, I can't randomly stumble across something. So I think we've maybe lost an element of, you know, how we listen to and how we discover or remember to listen to old records, because we don't see it anymore and we don't have that visual diary of our life there.
When you unpack them, how do you display your CDs? Is it just random? Is it in alphabetical order? I'd like to hear how you do that.
It always starts in alphabetical order, and then after about 3 years, it's a mess, and okay, I need to go back and redo it. However, if you remember the John Cusack movie High Fidelity, where he's a music fanatic,
yes,
and at one point he's trying to rearrange his record collection autobiographically. I'm not even sure what that means, but I want to do it.
It's interesting. So with my CDs also, they're still in boxes at the moment, but because I was living overseas, I came back and I still haven't settled yet. I've got this massive wooden CD rack that I had built with glass doors. It's got locks. I'm the only one who's allowed in there. No one's allowed in there except me. And I put them in alphabetical order. So for example, Kev Sherry will be under S. So if it's an artist, it will be under their surname. If it's they like Adele, it'll be under A. If it's a group, then it'll be the first name of the group. And say, for example, Kev Sherry. Say, for example, you've got 2-3 albums. It'll be first album, second album. And then when a new album comes out, I have to move all of those ones underneath to slot in. So in between each letters, there's a gap. So I can do that movement. And I do it every like 6 months. And it's tiring. And it's fun. And it's irritating. And my shoulders get sore, but it's great.
You know, I should have thought of the gap idea, because that's my problem. I have to squeeze things in or just leave them out. And then that's why 3 years later, I need to rearrange everything.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
I think essentially I'm a show off.
Okay.
I love the connection. When I go to a gig, I love getting that, you know, getting my mind blown by a performance or the interpretation of a tune. And I want to do that, you know. I want to reach out and, I mean, just the act of performing itself is a great joy. The act of singing and playing guitar is an extremely joyful experience for me. And if you can do that and connect with other people and see in someone's eyes that they're feeling the same thing that your song is communicating, that's like the greatest buzz ever.
I'm that person who's up in front. I'll take my cell phone out for a couple of videos, you know, photos, and I put it away. A lot of times these days, people have their cell phones out for a lot of time doing videoing, but then also posting and whatever, whatever. From the person on the stage seeing that, maybe sometimes more people's phones than eyes, does that frustrate you and remove people from the connection? Or it's just where, again, we are at the moment of society?
Probably a bit of both. On the one hand, I like the fact that someone is probably going to put that in social media and help promote me and my music. On the other hand, I just want to say, live in the now, be in the moment. Also, you're getting in someone else's way. So it's a sort of double-edged sword, but in an ideal world, just bathe in the music, you know, put your phone away. Yeah. I went to see Boy Genius perform a couple of years ago, and they, for a couple of songs, were quite clear about asking the audience to put their phones away. And it worked, because, you know, they have a extremely devoted audience, and do whatever they say.
These days it's so frustrating, because you go to theatre, you go to movies, and they say put your phone away, and then you still, I mean, I've had numerous movie premieres or screenings. I've been to movie a lot because I cover movies and theatre as well. And in fact, I was in one the other day, and I had to lean forward and say, just lady, can you please put your cell phone off? They say it at the beginning of the show, through one ear, out the other, like, oh, I've got an attention span of 10 seconds. I'm bored. Let me take my cell phone up and, like, let's disturb everyone around me. I was like, just gets my nerves.
I hear you. I hear you. It's it is. It's indicative of a sort of lack of attention and maybe a lack of appreciation of the arts to an extent as well, because in a way, arts have been slightly devalued, because you can get a small kind of rubbish version of it on your phone anyway.
I was thinking it's lack of respect for others, but that's just me.
Oh, no, completely.
So what's coming up next over the next period?
So we have the new album Wrath of Khan, and I've got, I'm just trying to work out. I kind of get confused between what gigs I have with Disco Mary and what gigs I have okay. solo. Constant stream of Disco Mary gigs, because Disco Mary are just starting to release stuff constantly, and actually for a new project starting to do quite well. But other than that, my main thing is writing just now. I'm writing so much that I'm planning to release another album by the end of this year. I'm just aware that we live in a world where there is so much music and so much content out there that it's very hard to cut through. So if the songs are coming, I'm just going to release them. I'm not going to play the record label game anymore of you release and wait 2 years then release. Hell with that, you know, just follow the muse. These days I'm all about following the muse.
So tell us a little bit more about the album.
It's a sort of fairly messy sounding indie rock affair. I sort of, my starting point in music was, I guess, that's that 90s kind of lo-fi, sort of slightly broken sounding music, bands like Pavement and I guess the sort of grunge scene and just very raw sounding stuff. So I've quite purposefully went for a very unproduced sound where it almost sounds like a band playing live. That was the intention of this record. It has a bunch of songs about my relationship with my wife. The title is based on an idiotic discussion I had with her where we have this thing in our relationship where we try and like psych each other out. And bear in mind that so I'm from the UK and my wife is American, so there are certain cultural differences and certain parts of our histories that we don't understand. So I managed to convince her, even though I was like maybe 3 or 4 years old at the time, I managed to convince her that I was an extra in a scene in the Star Trek movie Wrath of Khan. It's just that I'm not really a Trekkie, but it just seemed like a daft idea. And she kind of half believed me, but I just kept up the pretense. And I start laughing, she starts laughing, but neither of us are backing down. So I thought, Wrath of Khan, but I'll change the can to C-A-N on a note of positivity. And certainly in a world of extreme negativity, we could do with some positivity. So this is the wrath of the positive striking back against the negative.
I love this game. I know I've had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 5 minutes. I know your answer will be different every time. I recognize that and understand that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 artists... once you finish this conversation, and if you can think of specific songs from those artists, who would those artists be? And if you can think of songs, what would those songs be?
To my mind, one of the greatest pop songs ever written is Crazy by Gnarls Barkley. I know most people are sick to death of it, but I just love it. I think it's a phenomenal piece. So that would be one. A second one, I'm a massive fan of Neil Young, the sort of Canadian-American singer-songwriter. Yeah. So I'd probably put one of his songs, probably Like a Hurricane, up there. There's a very underappreciated and unknown song that was a minor hit in the UK in the mid-90s by a duo called McCalmont and Butler. The song's called Yes.
Yes. I've interviewed David for...
wow.
Yes, with Hi-Fi Sean, because they've released albums together recently. So I've, great song. I've got that CD.
Oh, tremendous. Yeah. Tremendous. So I think I'm on 3 right
yes,
now.
Yes, 2 more.
Now this is where I really need my missing CD collection to stay at. I thought for another one, there's a fantastic Scottish band called Young Favours. I love everything they do and try and see them live whenever I can, but probably my favourite song of theirs is called I Heard.
Okay.
So I'd check that out. And that's 4. And number 5 would probably have to be a sort of Scottish indie staple. So I would go for Teenage Fan Club and the song, I'd probably go for Sparky's Dream, which is probably their poppiest, guitariest hit.
Okay, cool. Nice mix. So Kev, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Like, podcasts like this are really important in a world where we, you know, attention spans are deficit and music no longer has a central place in the mass media, because we don't really have a mass media anymore. So keep listening to this podcast, keep listening to music, keep listening to music podcasts, and centralize music in your life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.